We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. April Fool's Day is traditionally a day full of practical jokes, and so today we offer the following tale of one of the early 20th century's most popular authors and his grand literary hoax. Arthur Train was a Harvard-educated lawyer-turned-fiction writer who created one of the country's most beloved literary characters in the lawyer with a heart of gold, Ephraim Tutt. Champion of the underdog, defender of justice, and moral crusader, Tutt was the kind of compassionate and passionate lawyer everyone wanted on their side. Train's tales of Tutt's tricky trial tactics won the hearts of millions of readers, both lay and lawyer alike, and it made him a household name. But a lawyer like that is probably too good to be true, and for about 20 years, that's what most of America thought. That is, until Ephraim Tutt penned his autobiography, entitled Yankee Lawyer. Yes, a fictional character apparently wrote his life story. It was the ultimate literary hoax that took in millions and caused much confusion among Tutt's most ardent fans. Creator Arthur Train did little to clear up the confusion. In fact, he could be accused of encouraging it. The whole story is the subject of a new book, The Myth of Ephraim Tutt, Arthur Train and His Great Literary Hoax, by author and lawyer Molly Guptill Manning. Manning tells Lake Effect's Stephanie Alecci more about Train's fictional paragon of virtue.
Well, Ephraim Tutt is basically just a public-spirited lawyer. He would take any case that came his way when the person was suffering from some kind of injustice, and he felt that he really needed to get involved so that he could make sure that the case would turn out with a morally satisfying result. Arthur Train based this character, I think, on Arthur Train's own experiences, because Train had actually been a district attorney for a little while, or an assistant district attorney. And so as he went to court, he would sometimes see people being prosecuted, and he felt like they did something wrong, but they did it because they were trying to do something that would actually benefit someone else, or they did something just completely with the most innocent motive, yet now they were going to be put into jail. He just felt like time and again, he kept seeing people facing a result that they really didn't deserve, and so he felt like he wanted to do something about that. So he created this character, Ephraim Tutt, who he was able to make a statement about the law through by writing all of these stories about how Ephraim Tutt would basically save people from horrible situations that they didn't deserve to be in.
Now, how popular did this character become, and why did he resonate so much with the American public?
Ephraim Tutt was basically the most famous character of the early 20th century. He was in books and magazines, and he actually ended up having his own television show in the 1950s. So basically from the 1920s through the 1960s, he was a household name, and he was just everywhere culturally. And I think that the reason why he was so popular is that he kind of grew with that generation. And as they went through hard times, he was kind of just there. Stories about him would be published in magazines, and people just kind of found him to be this trusty character that gave them hope. For instance, during the 1930s, the country was obviously going through the Great Depression, and people felt like they were swindled out of their houses, out of their savings, and just felt like just really unfair. And so the idea that there'd be lawyers out there who would take their case for free and who would help them get back on their feet and would make sure that, you know, all the wrongs that had happened to them would be righted, it really just made them feel hopeful for the future. And it made them feel like, you know, there was still goodness in the world. And a lot of people ended up writing to Arthur Train and saying things like that. And so Ephraim Tutt was just a really powerful symbol to a lot of people. And then once the country went to war during World War II in the 1940s, Ephraim Tutt had basically become like a symbol of America. He was compared to Paul Bunyan and Uncle Sam. And so people just thought that he was this ideal American. And people kind of were interested in reading what makes America, America, because as democracy was being challenged and people were trying to identify with why we were fighting in World War II, a lot of people turned to books and reading materials that helped define what it was to be American. And Tutt was as American as it gets.
This was then the perfect time, it seems, for Arthur Train to have written this autobiography of Ephraim Tutt. Tell us a little bit about Train's motivations in writing this book that then was framed as Ephraim Tutt writing his own life story.
I think with Ephraim Tutt, Arthur Train felt a really special connection with this character. And he did write about him beginning in 1919. And so by the time it was the 1940s, He had just really grown such an affection for the character that I think that he wanted to do something that would kind of honor all that the character stood for and that would give Tut basically like a lasting legacy, something that would memorialize all that he was. And so Arthur Train's health was kind of declining at this time, and I think that that was what gave him the impetus to go ahead and write this autobiography. He started writing it, and it took him a few years, actually, and he really seemed to craft it very carefully and really paid so much attention to the details that went into it. It was treated differently from, I think, any other book that he wrote, because he could write a book or two a year, and so that he spent so many years just very carefully detailing this one. I think it says how much it meant to him to really master who Ephraim Tut would be if he was a living person. I think that Train just loved this character so much that as his health was going downhill, he wanted to make sure that people would have something to remember Tut by, because I honestly think Tut meant so much to Train that Train basically felt like his legacy was Tut's legacy. And so that's why he ended up writing this autobiography, to just give this character a full chance to tell his entire story, to really elaborate on why he devoted his life to making sure that justice resulted in all cases, and kind of just giving lawyers a lesson about maybe how they should be approaching the law and not be thinking about the money-making that can be had, but how much good can be done through the profession of law.
Right. Lawyers really came to use Ephraim Tut and his courtroom shenanigans as kind of a model. That there was even a case book of Tut's most famous cases that was put out that lawyers often had on hand for reference.
That's true. That's the unique thing about Tut's stories, too, is they actually were based on real law. And so he had the legal community reading his stories because they checked out. They actually could be argued in court. And then some people actually did. They actually borrowed Tut's legal arguments and used them in actual courtrooms and won their actual cases. Tut definitely had the respect of lawyers. His legal strategies were so unconventional that as you read a story, it would almost seem like Tut would have to lose the case. And then he would just pull out just some kind of legal argument that no one had ever thought of, and he'd win. And so he had a following among lawyers and judges as well.
How was Yankee Lawyer, the autobiography of Ephraim Tut, presented when it was first published? And how unprecedented was this for a fictional character to write his own autobiography, write in quotation marks, of course?
Right. Well, Train did a spectacular job of presenting this book as a work of nonfiction. People had known that Tut was a fiction because he had been in print for almost 25 years as a fictional character. So for the most part, Train really thought no one would be confused by this because everybody knows that Tut is a creature of fiction. But Train removed his name from the title page, and so it just said the autobiography of Ephraim Tut, and it didn't say who wrote it. He actually had the book copyrighted by Ephraim Tut. It didn't look like he actually had anything to do with writing the book. And then Train actually wrote the introduction to Yankee Lawyer, and he wrote that Tut had been his best friend for 40 years, and he had a conversation with Tut saying, you really need to put your reminiscences in writing because people want to know what your life is like, and how Tut hemmed and hawed and didn't really want to do it. And then Train said, fine, if you don't do it, I'll do it myself. And so then Tut said, okay, I'll do it. And so he provides this whole explanation of why Tut never wrote any books before, but now all of a sudden he was writing this autobiography. And it kind of made sense to people. And so a lot of people were willing to suspend any doubt and just believe that if Train is saying that Tut's actually his friend and Tut has actually written this book, then they're going to believe him. It also helps that Train found photographs out of his own family photo albums that he thought represented what Tut would look like and what Tut's parents would look like. And so he included actual photographs in the autobiography of Ephraim Tut showing what Tut looked like when he was a youngster, and then what he looked like when he was in his teens. And then there's a regal portrait of Tut as a seasoned lawyer. And it just made it extremely believable.
I love, too, that in the book, quote, Ephraim Tut takes some pot shots at Train, his biographer of all these years.
Yes. In the autobiography, Ephraim Tut says, you know, Arthur Train wrote about this case in one of his, you know, romanticized tales about me, and he got me all wrong. He makes me sound like, you know, I'm worse than my adversary. And he says things like that. And so it makes it sound like Tut and Train really have this relationship, and he corrects Train on former stories that Train had written.
I mean, it may seem difficult for a modern audience to understand, but like people really fell for this hoax that this character that they had known as a fiction for decades, they thought was real and had published his own autobiography. But you document the letters that were sent to Train, his editor, Maxwell Perkins, and his publisher that showed that there were a lot of people who were really confused about this. Why do you think there was this gullibility, or maybe more politely, this willingness to suspend belief?
I think that people really wanted someone like Ephraim Tut to exist. When Train wrote the autobiography, it was 1943. World War II, it was still up in the air about who was winning, and no one was really sure about what was happening. And so I think that when this uncertainty came into being, where maybe Ephraim Tut existed, people would welcome that. They wanted him to exist because it just made the hopes that they had seem more real, and it made them just feel better about the world. I think that there were some people that may have just been genuinely confused and who didn't know Tut's backstory, that he had been a fictional character for so long, and they may have just picked up the book and read it and thought, wow, this is an autobiography of a real person. And then there were other people, though, who I think knew Tut for a long time, but they just wanted to believe in something that was a positive thing. And so they were willing to believe that Ephraim Tut was a real person. But also, the media was really complicit in this hoax.
I was just going to ask, you know, what role did the media have? Did they kind of lay this out there for the public, that this was, in fact, a hoax, that Ephraim Tut didn't exist?
Very few newspapers did. A lot of newspapers published book reviews, and they pretended, along with, I think, a Train's behest, but they pretended that Ephraim Tut was a real person and that Ephraim Tut had really written this book. And so a lot of book reviews presented it as nonfiction. So even people who had doubts, if they read a book review about it, you know, you have the New York Times telling you that this book is a legitimate autobiography, then that might make you more likely to believe that it really was. And there's just book reviews across the United States that helped perpetuate the idea that Tut was real.
So many of them were written with that kind of, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. And some of the reviewers got really creative in how they addressed the question of Tut's existence.
They did. One review claimed that he had written a letter to Arthur Train just saying, could you give me some clarification on a few points about Yankee Lawyer? And he ended up getting a letter from Tut in response. And so Train had this tendency that when people sometimes wrote letters about Tut, he would write them back as if he were Tut. He was doing the same thing with reviewers, and then the reviewers would document in their articles about Yankee Lawyer how they ended up having extensive correspondence with Ephraim Tut to discuss the details of the book. And so little embellishments like that really add to the feeling that this is a real story and it's a real autobiography and Tut is an actual person, because a fictional character can't write a letter to a book reviewer.
Exactly. Now, how did Train feel when he realized just how big the hoax had become and how many people had really been taken in? What kinds of consequences did he face?
When he first started getting letters from confused people, he kind of wrote them off and just thought, these are just very gullible people that it's nothing to pay attention to. But the problem was, mail started coming in daily, and like lots of mail was coming in to him and to his publishing company and even to his editor, with people that wanted to know whether Tut was real. And he got letters from people who would say things like, Tut has renewed my sense in humanity. Other statements like that were just how significant Tut had become to certain people. These letters really impressed on Train that people needed someone like Tut to exist. And so it put Train in a really difficult position, because I think that he really believed that readers would know that Tut was a fiction because he had appeared in books and magazine articles for 25 years as fiction. And so he didn't think people would be confused by it. But once he realized how many people were confused by it, I think he was kind of horrified I think that he had a hard time figuring out what to do and how to react to this and how to set the public straight. And he actually didn't really do anything for over 6 months as all of these letters kept pouring in and people would call him on the telephone and resort to all sorts of tactics to try to get to the truth. But at the same time, I think Train kind of enjoyed the hoax and he kind of enjoyed the publicity that he was getting as people kept expressing how confused they were. And every now and then you could just see how he would do something that didn't seem like he was totally innocent and uninvolved with it. Because, for instance, it was during the war, and so there was war bond campaigns that kept being held. And there was a huge auction that was being held, and all of the proceeds would go to fund the war bond campaign. And so Train wrote to his publisher and said, do you still have the top hat and the cane that you put in the window display at your bookstore on Fifth Avenue? And the publisher said, we'll check. They did still have the top hat and the cane. And then Train said, well, why don't we auction those off, Tuts, cane and top hat, for this auction? And so he's obviously kind of taking advantage of the situation a little bit. But on the whole, he claims at least that he had no intention of fooling anybody.
Was this cleared up in the eventual court case that was brought against him?
The court case that was brought against him was by an irate reader who had read the book and then read an article that Train published 6 months later saying, actually, Yankee Lawyer is written by me, not Ephraim Tutt, and Ephraim Tutt doesn't exist. The lawyer felt that it was a fraud. The book was a fraud because it represented itself to be nonfiction when the entire thing is fiction. But Train actually died while the lawsuit was in court. And so it never actually got resolved on its merits. Part of it did. Part of it got dismissed. But the other half was still pending when Train passed away. And so in the end, he actually escaped any kind of liability. And the court never really answered the question about whether Train should have been legally responsible for people that bought this book, thinking it was one thing and then finding it was another. But what's actually very interesting is that the media were all on Train's side. They thought that the reader who was claiming that the book was a fraud was out of line, and they actually made fun of him in the press ruthlessly. They wrote some pretty nasty things about him. And what's interesting is that 50 years later, James Frey wrote A Million Little Pieces. He embellished his memoir, and then he was sued for fraud. And that actually ended up resulting in a multi-million dollar settlement, so that all of the readers who bought A Million Little Pieces thinking it was a true account of James Frey's experiences got a full refund for their book.
Well, Molly Guptill-Manning, thank you so much for telling us about Ephraim Tutt and his creator, Arthur Train.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
Molly Guptill-Manning is the author of the new book, The Myth of Ephraim Tate, Arthur Train, and His Great Literary Hoax. It's published by the University of Alabama Press. Manning is a staff attorney in the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, New York. She spoke with Stephanie Lecce, and you can hear more of their conversation as supplemental audio at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we'll talk with the curators of the Color Rush exhibit at the Milwaukee Art Museum. You have a few more weeks to see it. Stay tuned. That's just ahead on Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.